and welcome to season 2 of 180 Degrees. For the next 8 episodes, we're sharing stories from people across Ireland working towards a cleaner energy future. We chat to the people who are making a real difference in the area of sustainable transport, home energy, and in our communities. We hear from businesses who are cutting carbon emissions, and we learn how energy research is shaping Ireland's future. 180 Degrees is brought to you by the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland and is supported by the Government of Ireland. Hello, I'm your host, Louise Ryan, and joining me today is Frances Clausen, the owner of Ireland's first A1-rated passive certified house, and Susan Andrews from SEAI's Home Energy Grants team. In this episode, we will be looking at the difference an energy-efficient home makes. 8 years ago, Frances embarked on a journey to build his A1-rated home in Wexford, and Susan and her team worked to promote the uptake of home energy grants in Ireland. Welcome to the podcast, Susan and Frances. Delighted to have you.
Thanks, Louise. Thank you.
Yeah, hi there.
Susan, today we're talking about the difference an energy-efficient home can make. Will you set the scene for me? The Climate Action Plan has set out a target of retrofitting 50,000 homes annually by 2024. Why is this so important and why is that the target?
Yep, sure, Louise. So Ireland needs to reduce its emissions in line with national and international targets. So in order to achieve this, we need to start looking at our building stock. We need to make them more energy efficient and largely decarbonised by 2050. So in response to this, as you've said, the government has set out targets in the Climate Action Plan to retrofit 500,000 homes to a minimum B2 BER rating by 2030. So as you say, that's 50,000 homes per year over the next 10 years that needs to be brought up to a minimum BER rating of B2. So in line with this target, the building regulations were updated there last November 2019. So they introduced Part L, and in this it stipulates that if a homeowner is making a change of 25% or more to the surface area of their home, they'll also at the same time be required to bring their home to a B2 rating. If this isn't economically feasible for the homeowner, they'll instead need to address their roof insulation. So they'll need to make sure that it's up to the current building regs. And they'll also need to look at their heating system. So they'll need to make sure that if their heating system is over 15 years old, it'll need to be a minimum 86% efficient. So it's all about reducing our carbon footprint. So that really, I suppose, gives you a sense of where we're going in terms of retrofitting our homes. We're going to need to reduce our energy consumption. And the B2 rating is a good starting point.
So for that B2 rating, to achieve that, Susan, what's involved for a homeowner?
Okay, well, look, it really depends on your starting point. So, I mean, if you're starting with quite a low rating, like a G rating,
sure.
What we would always say is you need to address the fabric first. So it's a fabric first approach. And what this means is before you start considering introducing renewable technologies, look at your home insulation. You know, make sure that you've got good attic insulation, because you're losing about 30 to 35% of your valuable heat through uninsulated roofs and walls. So that's your starting point. And that's going to get you on the journey to your B2. Then look, and obviously include windows and doors. So, you know, you want good windows and doors that are going to reduce the heat loss in your home. Then look at your heating systems in terms of efficiency. If you don't already have them, consider installing heating controls. This is going to give you greater control over the management of your space heating and your hot water demand. If you're considering a heating system upgrade, then heat pumps are a great alternative to fossil fuels. They're far more energy efficient. They're going to provide you with greater home comfort and reduce your energy bills, not to mention, obviously, reducing your carbon footprint. So once you've upgraded the fabric of your home in terms of insulation and your heating system, we would then say look at your renewable technologies, such as solar thermal for generating hot water and solar PV for electricity. This would be what we would consider the best approach to achieving your B2, and it's putting you on a good path to an A-rated home should you wish to further invest in the energy efficiency of your home.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot more sense for homeowners. So you're starting with the fabric first, you're insulating, making sure that your home is warm before you then look at getting a heat pump or changing any of your heating systems or anything like that.
Exactly. Yeah, it's all about the fabric first.
And is B2 achievable, Susan, do you think, for most homes?
I think it is. I mean, really, as I said, it will depend on your starting point. If you're starting with a low G-rated home, then, you know, that's clearly going to tell you that you don't have adequate insulation. So, you know, we want to bring these homes up to the current building regulation standards. Mm. So homes now have been built to an A-rated standard. So we're really focusing on retrofitting these older homes. And, you know, insulating your attic, as I said, you're losing a huge amount of your heat, but it's really one of the more inexpensive energy upgrades you can do in your house. And it's going to have a huge impact on the comfort value in your home, reducing your annual energy bills, and it's going to bring you up the BER rating. So yes, I mean, it is doable. There's various types of wall insulation you can consider. There's cavity wall, internal, external. So there's various types that you can apply to your home to suit your needs, your requirements, and your budget.
Yeah, and we'll chat a little bit about that later on as well. And our guest today, Francis, he has an incredible story, and we wanted to share this with kind of listeners today to show the difference that living in an energy efficient home can make to your life. Francis has obviously gone one step further from the B2 and actually has an A1 rated home. Francis, what inspired you to build your own A1 rated home? Was it always kind of a dream for you, or did it kind of just happen?
Good morning. Thanks very much. Well, I was brought up with a message of sort of for a person's bedroom to be healthy, it should be cold. But having lived, you know, in my parents' house, which used to be perishingly cold, used to get terrified at getting out of the bed in the morning. When I decided to build my own home, I sort of started searching the internet. And I came across this thing called an A1 energy house. And I came across a thing called a passive house. And it talked about just how little heating you required to keep that sort of home warm. And this really surprised me, but it also got my sort of technical brain working and my analytical brain working, wondering, you know, how could you build a home which required so little energy to stay warm? And you ask about what inspired me. So I just did a lot of reading. Reading is cheap compared to building. And I did a lot of that. And I was very lucky to meet Thomas O'Leary of the Passive House Institute, who invited me to his energy efficient house up there in Wicklow. And with that, I was smitten by the idea. So talking to him, reading your own SEAI website and other resources, I came to the conclusion this is the obvious route to sort of go down to try and build something that was really energy efficient.
And when you walked into Thomas's house, Francis, was it like just completely blow you away?
It surely did. Compared to, you know, say, the home I was brought up in, which was built in the back end of the century before then, 1890s, 1900s, which was always cold. The only warm room was the one with the fire alight. Sure. The idea of the whole house could be warm, it was just fantastic.
And Francis, could I ask, did you have much knowledge of these energy efficiency technologies before you embarked on this? And did you have any worries or concerns? Because I know that's something from talking to homeowners. They don't know where to start, and they've big concerns on taking on such a large project.
Well, there's two parts to that. Yes, I knew nothing about energy efficiency, and I mean really nothing. I thought you could insulate something to stop it cooling down too quickly. It was all sort of familiar with that. You put on an extra jumper on a cold day, but it doesn't really tell you about maintaining that constant living temperature. And, you know, once I started to learn, there's a lot to learn about. But at the end of the day, a home is a very simple thing, if you think about it. It's a box which we insulate right, we stop the energy leaking, and we ventilate it right. And it then should stay warm. And you ask about a concern I might have had. The only concern I really had was, did I believe all the stuff I was reading? Could you really heat a home for so little? Remembering the home I came from being quite so cold. You know, could I really believe that little amount of energy would stay warm and stay warm day, night, morning, evening, weekend, etc.? So the answer is, you know, did I know anything? No. Did I be nervous? Yes, that I wasn't going to get it right. Was I going to build a home that didn't work? But following all the great advice out there, you can get somewhere that really is successful.
Can you talk us through then the journey? So once you did your research and, you know, you went to look at these homes and got an idea of where you wanted to go, how did you start your journey and what were some of the key learnings that you took from that journey?
Yeah, I think the really important thing is to look at design first. I saw a number of energy efficient homes which had gone for very small windows, very thick walls, and hadn't really thought about that someone's actually got to live inside this thing. So we really looked at the design first and making super energy efficient sort of as a secondary step. And once we got the design right, we thought about, you know, where does the sun rise in the morning? Where does the sun set? In our own home, it's fantastic. The kitchen gets the morning sun. The middle of the house gets the daytime sun, and the sitting room gets the evening sun.
Lovely.
We thought about all those parameters as we built the home. And also think about our home, slightly odd, you know, our front door doesn't face the main road because the main road, I say main road, it's a country rural road, but that is due south. So why would you put your front door right in the middle of your due south aspect? You know, a couple of other things which are worth thinking about. You know, I was very lucky. I had a great team. My own architect, Zeno Vinkins, who is based in Wexford, was our architect, who also built the first straw bale house here in Ireland. And I had a couple of other people helping me. Andrew Lundberg, who helped me with all my thermal bridges. And we'll talk about that perhaps a little bit later on. And a great heating engineer, mechanical engineer for those sort of services. And my own builder, bringing all those components together. You know, working as a team was really important.
And so, Francis, you were obviously very involved in the project, were you?
I was, and I think that's something that's important to bear in mind. Either do it yourself or get someone else to do the maths of your BER rating and the energy efficiency rating. Now, I'm a software engineer by trade, so I sort of get that. But I think it's really important that you get someone who you can trust to help you do the numbers. And there's a couple of important things to look at. The first is what we call the thermal bridges. Now, anyone who's got a home, if you put your hand down at the sort of join between the wall and the floor, that's often the coldest place in the house.
Yeah.
And that's what we call a thermal bridge, where energy can creep out or creep in from the outside world or seep out to the outside world. And you really should look at the detail like that to help you limit the way in which, and remember, we're talking about it being a box through which energy can go or not go, about how you make that energy efficient. And don't ever forget air tightness combined with ventilation. And ventilation is really, really important because that stops the buildup of moisture, buildup of condensation. And you mentioned earlier the sort of design right, airtight and insulate right, being a fabric first approach is quite important.
What was the most challenging part then of the project, Francis?
I think, remember I did this, no, I started 9 years ago, was finding skilled people. Now, the SEAI and other institutions have done a lot of training in actual fact. I think Ireland has some of the best trained people who understand building energy-efficient homes now. But that was the first part. And the second was finding the right resources and materials. Nowadays, there's a lot more materials from the big manufacturers. You can go and read about it on their various websites. Who've thought about that and thought about the work that needs to be done. But I think it's really important that you should never just say, you know, if you ask someone about their product, never just accept it's okay, it'll work. I would always suggest you really get under the detail. You wouldn't go and buy a car or a new washing machine without first discovering, does it actually do what they're telling me it's going to do? And nowadays with ratings and certificates and the NSAI providing certification for products, it's a lot easier to know that what you're going to be using will work, providing it's installed and implemented correctly.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you as well, actually, cost-wise, you don't have to tell us how much, but did it come under budget, Francis, or was that was obviously something that you had to keep an eye on and everything?
It certainly is. This feels a little bit like one of the Dermot Bannon type in the end of the program. It says, how much did it cost? I think there's no reason why people can't build an energy efficient home, particularly nowadays. When we were building, it was a little bit more challenging. But I would recommend you get a quantity surveyor or someone to do some really good pricing. So you know before you lay one block on top of another where you're headed with the pricing and the costings. And you have that little pool of extra money because there will be things that crop up. But my view would be make sure you plan really early. Because when the express train starts and the build starts, be it a retrofit or be it a new build, decisions will need to be made quickly. And if you've done a lot of thinking is cheap, pencils on paper is cheap, do a lot of that early so that when you start, you know what's going to be happening.
And Francis, I think that's really good advice. But just from my own experience speaking with homeowners, I know that they're often put off when they start to do their homework and look at the cost. It can be very daunting and it can put them off it. Can you tell us, was your investment worth it? And how has it impacted on the running costs of your home?
Well, I'm only so happy to talk about that. So when we moved to Ireland, you can tell from my accent, I wasn't born here. My wife's from the Wexford area. We moved, we rented a house for a couple of years and we were burning around €2,000 worth of oil every year. and remember those really snowy, cold winters of, I think it was 2009, 2010.
Yeah, oil doesn't last long.
Exactly. It didn't last long at all. But just to give you, and remember the recent storm Ophelia, which came through, you know, when the whole country went code red for an hour or two. My typical annual heating bill is of the order of 150 to 200 euros a year. And I'll say that again, 150 to 200 euros a year. On top of that, there's the heat recovery system, which is another about 50-ish from memory. So the impact is huge. And we've now been here 8 years. So if you take 2K by 8 years, you know, it's a significant amount of money. Now it is
invest
up front. And it's a long-term game. It's not a short-term game. You've got to be playing with this thing.
I was just going to ask, in terms of payback, Francis, do you feel that you're obviously with such a huge decrease in your annual energy bills, so you can really see the payback and that it's worth it? So just to alleviate homeowners' concerns about this big upfront investment, they are actually getting it back every year.
Absolutely. Year in, year out. You know, I'm not worried the fact that I believe it's going to get wet and windy later in this week and colder at the weekend. I'm not thinking I've got to get more oil in or more timber in or whatever, because I know the home will sit at that one temperature. So yes, it is a big upfront investment. But nowadays, it's much more comparable to a regular build. But not doing it is a disaster zone. You will just be ended up, you know, burning oil or timber or whatever to keep your home warm. If you make the decisions now and get it right, I promise you, I'll put my fingers up, absolutely promise you, you will enjoy the benefit of it later on.
Yeah, and you're future-proofing your house. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, from 2,000 euros a year on oil to spending, 150, 200 euros a year? I mean, that's incredible. From someone who's living in a freezing cold house in Wexford at the moment and is quite jealous of you.
If you just look at today started, I was actually out early this morning. There was a little bit of frost on the cars. I didn't notice that until I went outside. One of the big challenges we used to have when the girls were still going to school, they've grown up, they're older now, was they didn't realize that they would need that coat going out the front door, because they're in the house and they didn't sort of really realize just how cold it was going to be when they went outside.
Oh my God, yeah. I have my coat on in the house. Susan, to retrofit a home, just say if you have a G-rated home or whatever, what's the rough cost then of getting to a B2? I know that it's going to be to vary massively.
Absolutely. It really, really does depend on the starting point of your house. So if you're starting with a G-rated home and you're planning on bringing it up to a B-rated home, again, I'm going to harp on about this fabric-first approach, because obviously being a G-rated home, you probably have very little attic and wall insulation, and maybe you need to look at your windows and your doors. But generally speaking, once you address the fabric and then possibly look at your heating system, you're possibly, for an average three-bed semi, you're looking at anything from 30 to 40,000 euro. Now, if you decide to go then down the heat pump route, you could be looking at an extra 5 to 10 grand for that installation. So that would be the upfront cost. But as we're saying, you are going to benefit from, like, your energy bills per year are going to be quite high at your current G rating. So, you know, you're going to be looking at reducing those energy bills from up to about 40% per year.
Yeah. I mean, as Francis just demonstrated there, it's pretty incredible the cost, you know, that you're saving every year. Francis, you installed a heat pump. So you've been using one now for 8 years. Can you tell us about that? And like, I suppose, would you recommend them to people listening?
I would do. So say in the previous house, we had a classic sort of oil-based unit. And the heat pump is fantastic. There's a lot of intelligence built into that. So it's not much like your boiler. It's not just an on-off type system. It measures the inside air temperature, the outside temperature, and uses all of that to make some of its own decisions as to when to come on. And it has a brain which sort of works 24/7 doing that. And nowadays, they've got sort of web interfaces and mobile device interfaces and things, so you can see what's going on. You don't have that concept in quite the same way of, I better turn on the heating on at 6 so the house is warm at 7, because you've got that insulation. You need to get over this thinking the house is going to do the sort of saw-shaped effect of temperature. It's going to be much, much smoother. And that was a big, big challenge for us.
Mm-hmm. And it also has great health benefits as well, having that constant temperature. So your heat pump is maintaining that constant temperature in your home. So it's actually better for your health as well.
It surely is. And remember, we're burning nothing on site. Now, as the power stations become more efficient and the wind energy and whatever other energy we end up generating, my CO2 footprint is going down. based on what the ESB and the electrical providers are doing to improve their service to me. I don't need to worry that I'm still burning oil and putting smoke up the chimney. So heat pumps gets you away from that, what I like to call the three bear heating, the sort of too cold and too hot. And they move more to the Goldilocks method, which is just right temperature all the time.
Lovely.
So that's really important. Our technology, you know, the heat pump works 24/7. I don't sort of set much times on it. And just to give you an idea, the heating doesn't typically run between March and October, roughly. You can look at the graph. There's sometimes, if you've got a really cold day, it might decide I'll come on. But generally from mid-March to mid-October, during the clock change season, the heat pump for the heating side doesn't need to run.
So you don't even have to think about it, Francis. It'll come on if it needs to, kind of a thing.
Pretty well, yeah.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And that's really useful because, say, if you're coming back late from someone, of course, we're not allowed out anywhere at the minute, but if you're coming back late from work or something, you don't need to think, oh, well, the heating's been running for 3 hours already, because the house is supposed to be fairly consistently warm. So you come in at 5, you come in at 7, or you come in at 10, the home is warm for you to be there, which is just great. And, you know, regardless of what your age or anything like that, if you're a family at home and you're there during the day as well, it sort of helps in those sort of scenarios as well.
It's no guilt so about turning on the heat and then in March.
Exactly.
Susan, will you tell us a little bit actually about the heat pump grant that SAAI offer?
Of course. We offer a range of different grants. So anything from insulation to heating controls, solar thermal, solar PV. But as you say, heat pumps. Now, heat pumps is a slightly different grant. And the reason being is that we have to make sure that a heat pump is going into a home that's suitable. So they're not just something that you stick into any house without any initial investigation into the home. You need to make sure that the home, again, is really well insulated. And the reason being is that if you have a home that's not well insulated, your heat pump is going to operate on overdrive and you're going to have high electricity bills running your heat pump and you're still going to have a cold house. So in order to safeguard homeowners, we have an additional step when applying for this heat pump grant. So you need to get what we call a technical advisor out to do an assessment of your home. And it's similar to a BER rating. They're going to look at the fabric of your home, looking at your roof, your walls, your doors, your windows, possibly underfloor heating. And they're going to give you an idea of whether your home is losing a lot of heat. And they base it on a heat loss indicator. If your home is suitable, you get that assessment and you can apply for the heat pump grant straight away and install your heat pump using a registered contractor. And once the works have been completed, you carry out your post-works BER. And we offer grants of $3,500 for heat pumps. Now, it's $600 for the air-to-air because they're smaller units, but it's $3,500 and you'll get €200 back for that technical assessment. Now, if the technical advisor tells you that actually your house isn't well insulated and that you're going to need to do some additional works, then you sign a declaration with that technical assessor and you have to carry out those additional fabric works before you can apply for the heat pump. So it's really just to make sure that homeowners are very aware that they need to make sure their home, again, talking about that fabric first approach, is really well insulated before they go installing their heat pump.
Would there be any other work, Susan, that they might have to do as well in addition to insulation? Would they have to upgrade any of their heating systems or anything?
It really depends. I mean, there may be things like, you know, if your windows aren't single glaze, you might have to install new windows. But in terms of heating systems, the heat pump contractor will come out and have a look at your heating system. And it may be the case that your existing radiators are suitable for your heat pump. So that might be fine. However, in some cases, they might say to you, look, we need to resize your radiators. There might be a bit of piping work that needs to be involved. So it varies greatly, again, on your starting point. I mean, installing a heat pump, we've seen, can be anything from 4,000 up to about 25,000 euros. So it really depends what you have in the house to begin with.
Okay. But if for anyone who's listening who has a really well-insulated home, maybe already has a BER rating of B2, a heat pump is obviously going to suit them.
It
really
sounds
well.
Like it would be a good, yeah, it was certainly worth getting a contractor to come out and have a look. If they're looking at changing their current heating system, heat pumps are definitely, they're a highly efficient, they're a much more favourable option to fossil fuels. And you're going to benefit from, I think you're reducing your heating bills from about €600 per year.
Francis, so then about the heat pump again, were people
completely baffled by them 8 years ago, because I suppose I don't think we would have heard of them really back then.
There was only one or two providers, and we had a great guy called Hitler from HeatDoc down here in Wexford who did the install. So he was just, and they were installing them commercially as well at the time for swimming pools and things like that. But it was a bit baffling. You know, the way I describe it to people, if you have a fridge, put your hand on the back of the fridge and the fridge will be warm and the inside of your fridge is cold. Heat pump purely works directly the opposite to that. The warm bit sits in the house and the cold bit sits outside the house. And they do work very, very efficiently, generally, and if you get them set up. And as Susan was just saying there, it's really important you insulate right to make it work, because you don't want the heat dripping away through those cold bridges and things like that. You want to keep the warmth in the house. If you do that right, they work very, very well.
So, Francis, in terms of, you know, you now have this beautiful A-rated home, What do you enjoy most about it? Is there one thing that stands out from previous places where you've lived?
Well, the one thing is, and this is really hard to get your mind around when you're building, is we generally don't close any of the internal doors in our home. I'm sure most people shut the door, you know, have been shouted at as a child, shut the door, stop the draft. Yeah. We don't have any draft.
Were you raised in a barn?
Exactly. No, you laugh at that. My parents do actually currently live in a 14th century cowshed in England. But it's an old thatch building. But, you know, there is no drafts. The only reason we shut doors is for privacy or for stopping our dogs moving around, etc. But, you know, we leave the doors open and the whole house circulates at that one temperature, around 22 degrees all the time. So that's the real difference. And it's hard to get your mind around that you're going to be able to do that.
So you don't have, I know in our house, you were always told if you feel the cold to go upstairs and put on a jumper.
Well, generally, in actual fact, I've got a cupboard full of jumpers, and at some stage they will go off to charity because I generally never use them.
Don't do them. That's amazing.
Oh my God, that's incredible. How do people react then to your home when they walk in, Francis? Are they just impressed with the heat?
They are. The people, you know, we have various family members who come down. It's sometimes harder to get rid of them than invite them down because the house is so warm. But, you know, people have said, you know, it's beautifully warm. I must re-emphasize that thing about ventilation because it's also beautifully fresh. So if you remember in the summer when you used to come back to a hot, stuffy house, your heat ventilation system works well at that time of year as well because it's permanently changing the air. And we've also been very lucky with getting, obviously, our A1 cert, which sits in the hall, on the wall in the hall there. We've had some great articles written by magazines like Passive House Plus, which has got some great information in it. And we won one or two awards from people like Isova. But also on a personal note, I've done some work with schools and colleges. So we've had quite a few students of various ages coming through the house, looking at what we've done as they try and build up their knowledge around that. And I've done some presentations at Carlo IT, amongst other places, where they've asked, you know, what does it take? What is the effort you need to do to keep it there? So there's great interest in it. And that has waned a little bit now because there's so much more information. But we still do get involved in things like the Passive House Open Days. Obviously not this year, but when you invite people just to come have a look and ask lots and lots of questions. That's my advice. Ask lots of questions. Understand how it's going to work.
I think that's amazing that you just let people in to have a look. And it's such an incredible way to actually educate people about A1 rated homes and about energy efficiency is to come in and actually feel it for yourself. Because I suppose for people listening to the podcast now, you can only imagine that kind of warmth and that kind of level of comfort unless you've experienced it yourself.
Absolutely. And it is only when you realize, you know, that it is possible. I was out yesterday doing some work in the garden. You come back in and the house is naturally warm, but also unstuffy because of the ventilation. It is just such a pleasurable experience. I promise every one of that.
What did you learn then, Francis, from building your own A1 rated home? And what would you say to anyone who's considering retrofitting their home or even self-building?
Well, I think anyone who's considering doing any work on your home, plan. Drawing on paper is very, very cheap. Redrawing a line on a piece of paper is very cheap. Get that professional advice of the different advisors we've spoken about. And if you have to do a little bit of replanning, because they've said, Francis, it'd be better if you could, you know, move it left, move it right, turn it towards the sun. So that's really important. Do that early, because when the express train starts, as I said earlier, it's too late, not too late to make decisions, but we've all seen the building programs on TV where they, you know, we need a decision by tomorrow morning what you're going to do here. And if you can plan that out really early, then you're in a good place. You know, we got very detailed about the whole thing. We even worked out where the light switches were going to go. Our architect says, you know, imagine walking around the house and where your hand would naturally reach to. And even down to the detail of what order the switches would be in for the different lights. Do that before you start, because it is, as I say, so much easier. And you know you've done all your planning when you don't wake up at night thinking, we never thought about that. So when you've got beyond that point, you sort of know that you're ready to start building. So don't start until you know what you're going to do. But once you do, because the train will start going, you'll need to be organized.
And as well as that, for anyone listening, there's obviously certain criteria for reaching an A1 rated home. Can you just talk us through that, Francis? And Susan, feel free to come in there as well.
Yeah, from my perspective, it was 8 years ago, so my knowledge is a little bit hazy now, but you know, it's around making that home energy efficient. You talk first of all about the heat loss and making sure you get that really tied down, no drafts, proper ventilation, those thermal bridges I was talking about. So making sure that you don't have cold corners in the rooms, in the joins between the walls and the floor and the floors and the ceiling. And therefore, when you have your products, insulation products installed, they're installed really well. And then to say, think about the ventilation. And I'm sure Susan's got some other comments around how SEI can help with some of that as well.
Well, just to come in there, I think, you know, Francis, your experience is, you know, working with a new build. I think there's huge challenges, and it's something we have to look at, obviously, with this target of retrofitting 50,000 homes per year. It can nearly be, and you probably would agree, Francis, it can nearly be more of a challenge to bring those older homes and retrofit them to bring them up to that B or A standard. So what we would always recommend for homeowners in that situation is, as you say, get your professional advice before you start. So, you know, a good starting point would be maybe get a BER assessor or a technical advisor to come out to your house. They're going to do a full assessment of your home and give you advice on where your home is operating efficiently and where it's falling down and what you can do to improve that BER rating. But certainly when you're looking at a retrofit, it probably is a little bit more daunting, because you don't have that luxury of sitting down and planning it and positioning everything. You're working with something that's already there, already has its problems. So it would be good to get your independent advice before you start on that journey.
And just to chip in on that, we've all seen enough of the Room to Improve stuff here in Ireland and the similar programs in the UK when they've started their build work. So absolutely, you know, do your planning, do your thinking. And as you say, Susan says, when you start peeling back the fabric and you start finding things, be prepared to perhaps adjust your plan and adjust the program to compensate for what you might find as you start delving into the fabric.
And Susan, then just, I suppose, what would you say to anyone who's listening to this and maybe is inspired by Francis's story? You've mentioned, obviously, getting advice first. How else can SEI support people?
Yeah, well, you know, as we spoke about, the cost can be a real daunting factor and can probably be one of the biggest barriers for homeowners actually taking on these projects. So what I would say is certainly have a look on the SEI website. Give us a call. We have a lot of supports there. So we have a range of fixed value grants. And just to say, they're not means tested. Now, there are eligibility criteria that the homeowner needs to meet. So there will be some of the energy upgrades will be based on the year of build of the house. And that's all to do with building regulations. So homes built from 2011 onwards will have some element of renewable technology.
Yeah.
Homes built from 2006 onwards will have some element of insulation. So we're really trying to focus. SEAI's focus is on retrofitting these older homes. So the primary purpose of the grants is to support those homeowners that are actually starting at a very low, like a G-rated house, and to give them a bit of financial support to bring them up to that B2 rating. So we have grants ranging from €400 to €6,000. So we cover roof insulation, various types of wall insulation, heating controls to make your heating system more efficient, giving you greater control over the demand on your hot water and your space heating. And then, as I spoke about, we have grants for heat pump systems, solar thermal, solar PV. And we also offer grants then that are means tested, that are free energy upgrades for homeowners that are in receipt of certain welfare payments. So there is quite an array of grants available, and the details are on the website. And as I said, there is a team there to support homeowners if they have any queries, to give us a call and we can talk them through the whole process.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. There is a range of grants there to kind of hopefully support everyone who needs them. Francis, I wanted to ask as well, just before we kind of finish up, have you had to do anything to the house in the last 8 years, or is it just an A1 rate at home? Is there much improvements to it that you need to make?
There's no improvement. As with any home, there is always just a little bit of maintenance work. So the heat recovery system needs filters changing, but that's no difference getting your oils pumped, oil heating serviced. But other than that, other than the sort of regular maintenance you do to any building as it gets a bit older, at some stage we'll have to paint it again and things like that, there is no additional work that needs doing. It really has settled in and behaved itself and operated really well. And just coming back to what you're all saying there, you know, do feel inspired. Do a lot of reading and understand what's possible as you move in to try and make your homes more efficient. You really will enjoy it at the end of the day. I promise you of that.
Yeah, thanks, Francis. And I suppose so many people, when they're planning on building or retrofitting their home, they're thinking of, oh, I can't wait to get that lovely kitchen, or I can't wait to have this or that. But it like having that comfort is so invaluable. It can't be really described.
I would completely agree with that. You know, the nice kitchen can wait till next year or the year after. Do the fabric first, as Susan mentioned. Get that organized and then move forward from there. You won't regret it. Going back to try and fix, and I've seen homes locally built around here where they haven't done that, and they're now in the pickle of, it's cold and I want the new kitchen and I want whatever, and it's tricky. So do that fabric first, get that right, and then move on. Most people are going to stay in the home for many years, particularly in rural Ireland. People stay for a long time, and it's well worth just getting ahead of that and getting the work done.
That's fantastic. Francis and Susan, I want to thank you both so much for joining me on the podcast today. Francis, your story is so inspiring. We'll share pictures as well of Francis's house, and we'll share some of those articles with you so you can have a look. Thank you both.
Thank you, Louise.
You're most welcome.
Thanks for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode, then please like, share, and subscribe to our podcast wherever you're listening now. You'll find previous episodes on our website, seai.ie/podcast, along with information about our grants and supports. See you next week.